WhatsApp users are being advised to upgrade to the latest version of the messaging program after reports of spyware monitoring people's calls. This is just the latest challenge for WhatsApp owner Facebook. But in his recent reason blistering op-ed, Facebook co-founder Chris Hughes made it plain. Facebook shouldn't have been able to acquire WhatsApp and now should be forced to drop it and Instagram. While expressing affection for his old doormate Mark Zuckerberg, Chris Hughes, who left the company years ago, says Facebook is a monopoly. It either crushes competition or copies it, stifling innovation, and it captures users. There was that delete Facebook movement after it was revealed that the Steve Bannon-backed Cambridge Analytica took users' data from Facebook. But people who wanted to leave had nowhere to go. Hughes says at one time in history, Facebook would have been broken up and should be now. And that while that feels un-American now, it's because of a concerted effort by conservative free marketers over the past 40 years to convince us it's un-American. Hughes says, in fact, the country's founders would have embraced it. Jared Bernstein was an economic advisor in the Obama administration and is now senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Jared, I don't even know. Did you think Facebook should be broken up?
I didn't think so before I read his article, but I found the argument extremely muscular. You know, there was so much written about the piece that I sort of felt like I'd read it without reading it, and then I sat down and read it. And when I did so, I was just blown away by just how strong and coherent and convincing and muscular that argument was. And I'm largely convinced. I think there's an alternative of much more heavy regulation, but either way, a lot more needs to be done to rein in their power.
He said the founders not only created checks and balances for government, but they did for business. Jefferson and Madison read Adam Smith, who believed that big monopolies prevent competition that spurs innovation. Hughes quotes the Ohio Republican John Sherman in the late 1890s saying on the floor of Congress, "If we will not endure a king as a political power, we should not endure a king over the production, transportation, and sale of any of the necessities of life." He was talking about railroads in particular and talking about the cost to consumers. In other words, if you only have one behemoth, you can't shop around. And so the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890 outlawed those monopolies. But how do you find one? Because, as we said, Hughes says Facebook either buys up or copies companies that compete. It's worth $500 billion, commands more than 80% of the world's social networking revenue, blocks other companies. Vine, the Twitter video network, couldn't use a tool for users to search for Facebook friends. It soon failed. In 2016, Mark Zuckerberg told Facebook workers, "Don't be too proud to copy," and they did copy Snapchat. It sounds like the original monopoly busting was because, you know, it meant consumers had to pay too much. Facebook is free.
This is a really key insight. Today's monopolies are not necessarily manipulating us on prices. They're not jamming up the prices in the industries they concern. Of course, you just said Facebook is free, but you could think of Amazon in the same light. I mean, people go there because prices are low, not because they're using their monopoly power to raise prices. So you have to look at something else, and that something else is market share or market power and the other distortions that that incurs. So in the case of Facebook, we have the well-known problems we had in the last election. But if you simply look at the share of the market that they dominate, or for that matter, the share of the market that you can find specific companies dominating in everything from hardware to retail to pharmacies to even mattresses and beer, you're going to find that same problem. It's not necessarily the kind of price distortions that our original antitrust laws were targeting.
Well, the breakup of AT&T and IBM in the 1980s was about companies using size to stifle innovation and crush competition. And by the way, AT&T, as part of that breakup, was prohibited from going into what was then a very young computer industry. And Hughes says that's why there was competition for coming up with that computer industry. If there hadn't been, we might not be where we are today. But what about this idea that he says that Facebook also has a monopoly on our thinking because it does control so much of what we see and read and say?
Well, I think, again, Facebook is unique in that regard. And in fact, one of the things that I wonder about in terms of Hughes's suggestion to break Facebook up is whether actually breaking them up would do the trick. Because imagine you had three or four or five smaller Facebooks, at least on paper, but the majority of the users all gravitated towards one, because these are all about networking, network effects. Mm. Well, if you have everybody pretty much on one platform, even if you have 20 platforms, you still have the same problem. So while breaking up Facebook might be a partial solution, there's no way around this outside of some much more serious government regulation. And thus far, and Hughes was very clear about this, Congress has completely abrogated its role in that regard.
Well, but he does make the point that if you broke up Facebook, you might have competition, because right now investors won't even invest in other companies because they know that Facebook, you know, might gobble it up.
Well, let me respond to that. Yes, you might have competition, but you also, just by dint of the nature of social networking, you might have everybody just land, or not everybody, but, you know, 80, 90% of the users land on one platform, and you'd be back where you started. All I'm saying is that breaking up is probably just a partial solution.
Yeah. Well, but he does make the point that if there was a breakup, you and other companies had a chance, you might have a company that pledged to better privacy, or you might mm-hmm. have a company that pledged to better screening of the information that came in and pledged to some kind of an oversight of what they allowed in. I mean, he tells the story of how Mark Zuckerberg heard that there were people calling for genocide through Facebook in Myanmar. And he said, I'm going to block those calls. I'm going to block those posts. And as Chris Hughes said, that's great. But what if it's something else that Mark Zuckerberg alone, mm-hmm. one person decides to block? I mean, are we comfortable with that? He says, you know, we're not paying with money, but we may be paying in other ways. Just remind us, Jared Bernstein, how did we get here? How did it happen that this idea that government could and should step in when there's a monopoly became un-American? He writes about a movement starting in the 1970s.
Yeah, Chris is exactly right about that. And it's a critical point. We got here because the notion of laissez-faire economics, essentially leaving corporations alone to grow as big and powerful as they want, was sold as integral to an efficient economy, that the damage done from regulating the size or power of corporations would be far worse to the economy's performance, efficiency, output than keeping them down to size. And as you correctly pointed out earlier, Robin, that's new thinking. If you go back to earlier periods in American economic history, it wasn't something that Democrats and Republicans fought about. There was a very common view, as you said, dating back to Adam Smith, that this kind of dominant corporate power had to be checked, because to do so actually was positive for the economy. It would actually promote innovation, productivity, the economic dynamism, where small firms that had some special attribute were able to grow in an environment that they weren't crushed by a dominant firm within the industry. This was well understood by economists, but we forgot about that because, in fact, the forces who benefit from corporate concentration basically started to dominate the argument in the 1970s by essentially buying up the intellectual architecture of those arguments and convincing everyone that taking action against corporate power was destructive, when in fact, the opposite can be the case.
Jared Bernstein, before we let you go, again, senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, an economist through and through, I'm taken by your saying that Chris Hughes' extensive piece, which we will link to and I urge everybody to read, kind of changed your mind. Is there a conversation going on with economists because of this?
Very much so. The notion that we had to reform our antitrust laws to push back on corporate power is not something that you'd find sessions about in economic conferences going back 10 years. Now it's commonly understood to be an important market distortion that we have to address. I think the thing that economists had to get over was to stop looking solely at price and look at other aspects, holding down wages, using their corporate power in political ways. We've had to broaden our scope, and I think it's much more broadly recognized. And I think one bit of evidence for this is not just from the economists, but if you look at the politics, I suspect that pretty much every one of those 20-plus people running for office on the Democratic side are going to have antitrust reform in their platforms. And that gets back precisely to the argument that Chris is making.
Jared Bernstein, senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Robin.
So, break up Facebook, or is the horse out of the barn? The Trojan horse, maybe, in this case. Thoughts welcome, hereandnow.org.